This episode is brought to you by Pronamel.
Not all our favorite foods and drinks are BFFs with our teeth. Salad dressings, seltzers, and fruits can be enamel enemies. So if you eat or drink those things regularly, your enamel could be at risk. And once it's gone, it's gone.
Pronamel Intensive Enamel Repair penetrates deep into the enamel surface, locking in vital minerals to repair acid-weakened enamel. And with new Pronamel Repair mouthwash, you can enhance that repair beyond just brushing.
Pronamel is the number one dentist-recommended brand for acid erosion, so buy Pronamel Repair anywhere you buy toothpaste or mouthwash. Visit pronamel.com.
Ready? Let's go. Give me a vacation.
Vacation!
Give me a golf course.
70 courses!
Let's get a water sport.
Paddleboarding!
Can I get excursions?
Whale watching!
Time for chill vibes.
Beach yoga!
How about a garden tour?
Balboa Park!
Give me a dolphin. What's that spell?
San Diego!
If you're happy and you know it, San Diego is the place to show it. Book your trip at sandiego.org. Funded in part with the City of San Diego Tourism Marketing District Assessment Funds.
As important as choosing the right destination when traveling is choosing the right travel partner.
Gene! Gene Fodor!
Gene, what's good?
But be careful, because the worst trips result when two partners have two different agendas.
The CIA really need your help, Gene.
Freeze, Americano!
Gene, run!
Listen to Fodor's Guide to Espionage on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Imagine you're a fly on the wall at a dinner between the mafia, the CIA, and the KGB. That's where my new podcast begins. This is Neil Strauss, host of To Live and Die in L.A., and I wanted to quickly tell you about an intense new series about a dangerous spy taught to seduce men for their secrets and sometimes their lives. From Tenderfoot TV, this is To Die For. To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, and welcome to Food Stuff. I'm Annie Reese.
And I'm Lauren Vogelbaum. And today we're talking about our first, we're doing a first foray into fast food.
Yes. And it is probably the biggest fast food company. Probably, absolutely.
Yeah, in the world, for sure. McDonald's!
McDonald's! And I've got to say, more than anything else, you listeners have written in about McDonald's.
Yeah, especially international stories about McDonald's. And then as we have read some of those listener mails, more other national stories about McDonald's. There's a lot of McDonald's zeitgeist out there.
There absolutely is. And it's come up in a lot of our episodes as well. We talked about it in French food, apple pie, soda, tipping. And our brother podcast, Stuff You Should Know, has an entire episode on McDonald's called How McDonald's Works.
Appropriately.
Exactly, yes.
It is delightful. I totally recommend you listen to it. I mean, also, like, it covers a lot of different material than we're going to cover today. So,
right.
Yeah.
So if at the end you're like, you know, I could really use some more McDonald's. Well, Stuff You Should Know has you covered.
They do.
So what is it?
Y'all know this one.
Yeah, I would guess so. If you don't, McDonald's is a chain of fast food restaurants, and you probably definitely knew that because you can find them almost anywhere. In 119 countries, although not Iceland, last I checked, as of 2015, there were around about 36,258 of these restaurants. Around 30,000 of them franchised, and of the 350 closures in 2015, most of them took place in the U.S. and China. The largest percentage of revenue, 40%, comes from Europe, mainly the U.K., France, Russia, and Germany. The U.S. comes in second, accounting for 30% of the revenue, and the remaining percent is Asia, Africa, and the Middle East.
But sales are not as impressive as they used to be.
No, they fell in the U.S. by 2.1% in 2014, and its annual net income dropped 15%, which is that's a pretty big percent, to a measly $27.4
billion. Oh,
how do they go on?
Oh, my goodness.
How do they go on? That's equivalent to the 90th largest economy in the world, by the way. This is about a 4% decline in customers, which is about a million people. Analysts speculate this has a lot to do with your Five Guys, your Chipotles, you know.
all those fast casual kind of dining concepts.
Yeah, fast casual. And also those dreaded millennials.
Oh.
Like, we ruin everything.
We do.
Dylan just gave us a big thumbs down. He's right.
Uh-huh.
So we're the millennial generation is allegedly, supposedly, shifting to healthier food, more ethical food is what we're going for. Whether or not we're getting it is questionable. But
sure.
In the words of global restaurant consultant Aaron Allen, McDonald's has picked way too many fights with way too many people. They're fighting Taco Bell over breakfast and Starbucks over coffee. They're basically spreading themselves too thin.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, it's not that they're not trying to turn things around, though.
Oh, no. They've tried several things. In 2015, they introduced the Create Your Taste menu to about 2,000 of its restaurants in the U.S. This menu allowed you to individualize your burger.
What?
Individualization. That can't be. Which, with your drink and fries, would run you about $8 as compared to the $5 for ordering off the standard menu. But, as you probably discerned from the past tense, it's no longer around. Most Create Your Taste menus were replaced by a less robust Taste Crafted menu.
Hmm.
Kind of sounds like glasses. Is it Lens Crafted?
Lens Crafted, Taste Crafted.
You know.
Yeah.
I guess it's a similar concept. Over the past few decades, McDonald's has been testing out healthier menu options, your fruits and your vegetables, decreasing the portion sizes, lowering the salt content by about 10%, things like that. And since Americans get on average 11% of their calories from fast food, this is nothing to sneeze at.
That number shocked me. 11% of our I guess the fast food tends to be more calorically dense than a lot of other foods, but still that's a large number.
That is quite a percentage. According to The Guardian, McDonald's serves 69 million people a day, which is more than the population of Great Britain and equivalent to around 1% of the human population on Earth.
What?
A day.
Per day. Every day. Okay.
And I got hypnotized. There's this website called Every Second. And I went to the Every Second page of for McDonald's. And it was about 75 burgers a second after second after second. And the number just goes up and up and up.
Oh.
Yeah. It was something. In the U.S., it's estimated that about 65% of customers get their food via drive-through, which has led to some interesting product innovations like the McGriddles, an on-the-go answer to the pancake. I really feel like I have to make a confession right now. I haven't been to McDonald's since I was 4 years old.
Four? What? Mm-hmm. How have you avoided it?
I was one of those kids that, like, went on strike. I don't know. I picked a fight with McDonald's at 4 years old, and I haven't been back.
What was the fight about?
I think it was about capitalism.
Oh.
I was...
4-year-old Annie.
I really was a troubled child. I basically like to pick fights with things that were popular.
Oh.
Like, blah.
Okay.
So I don't know what a lot of these popular things are. I don't know. Like McGriddle. I don't know.
A McGriddle is like an Egg McMuffin. It's a breakfast sandwich, but instead of having a savory bun, it's a maple-flavored sweet bun. So...
Okay.
So you can... But it's not soggy from maple syrup. It's just maple syrup
just
flavored.
Flavoring.
So, yeah.
Okay.
McGriddle.
Interesting.
Hmm. I don't go often. Usually if I'm like on a road trip or very occasionally if I get an intense craving.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I've been in when I travel, I like to go in and look at the menu just to see how it's different.
But you don't order anything?
No, never. I almost broke in China and got a McFlurry. So close. But I did not.
McFlurries are delicious, especially if you dip French fries in them.
I've heard that.
It's very important to my livelihood.
Yeah. I've heard that.
Not livelihood, lifestyle. Anyway,
yes. Yes. Let's talk about employment. Employment numbers. McDonald's employs 420,000 people in the U.S. And we've heard from some of you. Hello.
Yeah.
Throughout the year.
Hi, we're both waving.
Yeah, we're both. Sorry. Throughout the year, McDonald's hires 1 million Americans, which comes out to be a 150% turnover rate.
How?
Wow. Yeah. The company estimates that 1 in 8 Americans have worked at a McDonald's in their lifetime. Whew. Worldwide, McDonald's has 761,000 employees, and that's more than the population of Luxembourg.
Huh.
Some of these employees may attend the Hamburger University.
Hamburger University!
Mm-hmm. The first of these to open was located outside of Chicago, and it has seen over 80,000 students on its roster. There are now 7 campuses around the globe with over 275,000 graduates, and the one in Shanghai has an acceptance rate of less than 1%.
For contrast, the acceptance rate at Harvard is like 6%.
Yeah. It's harder to get into the Hamburger University in Shanghai.
And it's not about hamburgers. Well, I mean it is, but it isn't. It's a restaurant management skills program. You can graduate with a degree in hamburgerology.
Oh.
Or apply credits towards an associate or bachelor's degree at some other non-strictly hamburger-related school.
Mm-hmm, if you can find one. After a series of protests in 2015, McDonald's raised the minimum wage for its U.S. employees from $9.01 an hour to $9.90 an hour, but only at company-owned restaurants as opposed to the 12,500 franchised-operated locations. The employees at franchise locations typically get the state minimum wage of wherever they are located. And in 2017, Merriam-Webster Dictionary added McJob as a word, meaning low-paying job.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The previous CEO was paid $9 million that year.
Oh.
Just, you know, FYI. Mm-hmm. On the note of franchisees versus company-owned, there is quite a bit of tension, distrust, between franchisees and quote-unquote, the man, the head McDonald's office. A 2015 survey of franchisees found that on a scale of 1 to 5, 1 being poor and 5 being excellent, the average was 1.48. That's pretty low.
Yeah.
The all-time average is 2.1. Not a great relationship, it seems. But it is worth pointing out that only 32 American franchisees were surveyed.
Oh, of the 19,000 something something.
Yeah. Okay. Of that rather larger sure. number. We'll be talking about this a bit more later, briefly, but there is a McDonald's museum in Des Plaines, Illinois, or there was. As of recording, it closed 2 days ago.
Oh, what?
Yeah. It was scheduled to be demolished due to flooding. If any of you listeners have been to it, please, please, please write in. Send pictures.
Yeah, send photos, please.
Yes. Oh. With 20% of sales, including a toy, since the introduction of the Happy Meal, McDonald's also happens to be the largest toy distributor in the world.
That blew my mind.
Me too. Now, that is one thing that young Annie, when she gave up McDonald's, that was the hardest. When my brothers would be like, look what we got.
Oh, look at the toy I got.
And I'm sitting there, no hamburger, no toy. Also, the slogan, I'm loving it. With that vocal tag, ba-da-ba-ba-ba, mm-hmm. is an entire Justin Timberlake song from 2003.
What?
I thought it was way older than that, one. And two, the song came out first. He wrote it for well, he didn't write it, but it was for McDonald's.
Yeah.
And it came out first because it's this thing called reverse engineering of advertising.
Right, sure.
Yeah. And there's a lot of drama behind it if you're interested in that. There's also a clip of Destiny's Child singing it, too.
Oh, my God.
I watched the music video and was, well, there's no words. But there are words for some flops McDonald's has had throughout the years. Some of them include the McLean Deluxe, the McHot Dog, the McPasta, the McPizza, the McArabia, which was a flatbread with chicken, lettuce, and garlic sauce, and the McAfrica out of Norway, which was beef and vegetables in a pita. And you can imagine the PR was very not good.
Yeah, Norway probably shouldn't be coming out with a McAfrica, especially in the middle of a that was when there was a huge like drought and starvation issues going on.
Yeah, it was 2002, and there was a large famine in Africa at the time, so they quickly pooled that one.
Well, that's good for them.
Yeah. Depending on where you are in the world, as I kind of alluded to earlier, you're going to find different things on the menu. In India, where for a large part of the population, cows are sacred, you do not eat them, you're not going to find much beef.
Fewer hamburgers, but beef hamburgers, yes.
Exactly.
I would imagine so.
Yes. And because McDonald's has become this global force, it has come to symbolize so much more than just a fast food restaurant chain.
Oh, yeah.
On the positive, more corporate speak end of the spectrum, it represents America and American family values, consistency, speed, innovation. And this, as you can imagine, was by the company's design. On the negative end, It represents American cultural imperialism, this nonstop machine of capitalism that has devalued quality and originality for quantity and cheapness. There have been protests, bombings, deaths at McDonald's around the world. Seriously, I read a very in-depth essay about McDonald's in an international affairs class in college. Economist Thomas Friedman named a whole theory about it, the Golden Arches theory of conflict prevention.
What?
Yeah. He argued that globalization is a force of peace.
Oh.
And he pointed to the fact that, at the time, no two countries with McDonald's in them had ever been at war with each other.
Wow.
But in 1999, this changed when the U.S. and NATO bombed Serbia. Both had McDonald's. So kind of it's become a big thing.
Literally and psychologically and culturally very large. And we'll talk a little bit more about that later. But first, let's get into the history, the humble beginnings of how this behemoth started. But even before that, let's get into a quick break for a word from our sponsor.
This episode is brought to you by Pronamel.
Not all our favorite foods and drinks are BFFs with our teeth. Salad dressings, seltzers, and fruits can be enamel enemies. So if you eat or drink those things regularly, your enamel could be at risk. And once it's gone, it's gone.
Pronamel Intensive Enamel Repair penetrates deep into the enamel surface, locking in vital minerals to repair acid-weakened enamel. And with new Pronamel Repair mouthwash, you can enhance that repair beyond just brushing.
Pronamel is the number one dentist-recommended brand for acid erosion, so buy Pronamel Repair anywhere you buy toothpaste or mouthwash. Visit Pronamel.com.
Ready? Okay. Give me a beach.
Beach!
Give me great food.
Tacos!
Give me adventure.
Hiking!
Give me a date night.
Sunset cruise!
Give me some smiles.
Cheese!
Give me more beaches.
Beaches!
What's that spell?
San Diego!
If you're happy and you know it, San Diego is the place to show it. Book your trip at sandiego.org. Funded in part with the City of San Diego Tourism Marketing District Assessment Funds.
As important as choosing the right destination when traveling is choosing the right travel partner.
Gene!
Eugene Fodor!
Gene, was booted!
Much of the joy you will find on the road comes from the person you share it with.
So you write the books, Jean, and Vlastar runs the business. I understand now. It's a wise man who marries a wiser woman.
But be careful and choose your travel partner well, because the worst trips result when two partners have two different agendas.
Get down!
I'm not stupid, Jean. Something is going on, and it's high time you tell me the truth.
Freeze, Americano! Huh? Oh!
Jean! Run!
So travel before it's too late. Your money will return. Your time won't. And we're all too quickly approaching that final destination.
Listen to Fodor's Guide to Espionage on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Neil Strauss, host of the Tenderfoot TV true crime podcast, To Live and Die in LA. I'm here to tell you about the new podcast I've been undercover investigating for the last year and a half. It's called To Die For. Here's a clip.
All these girls were sent out into the world, and they were told, try to meet important men, try to attach yourself to important men.
The voice you're hearing is a Russian model agent telling me about spies sent out to seduce men with political power.
The war in Ukraine is also being fought by all these girls that are all over important cities.
For the first time, a military-trained seduction spy reveals how the Russian government turns sex and love into a deadly weapon.
If you want to kill your target, it's easy. You just seduce him, take him somewhere, start having sex, and then he's very vulnerable, so you can kill him easily.
To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And we're back. Thank you, sponsor.
Yes, thank you.
I wanted to start this by saying it is very interesting indeed to read the history of the McDonald's on the McDonald's official website versus pretty much anywhere else.
And anyone else writing about it. Yeah, it's stark.
It's very different.
Yes.
Anyway, our story begins with the Great Depression.
The Great Depression?
Yep. That's where we're going to start.
Perfect.
Yeah, that's where we always want to start, right? There were two brothers from New Hampshire, Richard and Maurice McDonald, or Dick and Mac.
Or McDonald singular. Yeah.
Oh.
Just the one McDonald. Yeah,
that's true.
It's not a pluralized McDonald. Yeah.
Not yet. Just kidding. Okay. After their father was fired from a shoe factory, they both got it in their head that they really wanted to be their own bosses. Mm-hmm. And not just that, they wanted to be millionaires.
Oh.
Millionaires by the time they turned 50.
That's ambitious. That's nice.
Yeah, very ambitious. There was not a lot of opportunity for millions in their hometown, however. So they packed up and went west to Hollywood, hoping to become big-time producers, movie producers. However, becoming a big-time producer can be a bit difficult.
Weird.
Yeah, strange. And they ended up moving movie sets, and no millions were forthcoming. They did open a movie theater in Los Angeles, but it didn't last very long, so they sold it in 1937. After their stint in showbiz didn't pan out, they decided to take a swing at the restaurant biz. For their first venture, they made an octagonal open-air structure out of borrowed wood near the Foothill Flying Field, or as it was sometimes called, America's Friendliest Airport. The area surrounding it attracted all types, whether they were looking to watch planes or hoping to catch a glimpse of someone famous or both. And they made a deal with Sunkist of orange juice fame. This was at the height of orange juice's heyday, to buy up their fallen oranges. 20 dozen oranges for a quarter.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
They called their stand Airdrome, and they sold orange juice and hot dogs, which is not
a combination. It's a pairing that I wouldn't naturally. Sure.
Yeah. But it was a success, enough so to open two more locations. They still had their eyes on that millionaire prize, though, and they thought the future was in automobiles, especially because they thought that the five-day American work week would decrease to four, you know, have more time to drive around.
Ah.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. Still waiting on that one.
Yeah, not here yet.
Nope. To that end, they spent $200 to slice their stand in half and relocated to San Bernardino, California. And they were able to talk their way into a $5,000 loan May 15th, 1940, close to historic Route 66. They opened McDonald's.
The very first McDonald's?
The very first. However, it was not a McDonald's that we would recognize, or that it's not what we would know today. It was a drive-in, meaning there was very little in the way of seating, and female servers in tight shirts and short skirts and majorette boots would bring food out to your parked car. These outfits were recycled from a local theater, by the way.
Ah.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Then, yeah. Then there was their menu. Slow-cooked, Lauren. Barbecue. And imported hickory chips. The go-to combo was a barbecue sandwich and chips for 35 cents. You could also find things like tamales, peanut butter and jelly sandwiches, chili, pork and beans, and yes, a basic burger. As I said before, I haven't been to McDonald's in a long time. I don't know. Maybe that's not super weird now.
That's super weird.
Okay, cool.
At American locations, anyway.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's definitely not what they're known for. This first iteration of McDonald's was a success, with up to 125 cars in the parking lot on the weekends. But Dick and Mac were looking to differentiate their business from the crowd after increased drive-in competition post-World War II.
Ah, yeah.
And they noticed that the hamburger accounted for 80% of their sales. Hmm. So they started chipping away at the menu, and the more items they got rid of, the more hamburgers they sold. Makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
The brothers also noticed, well, they kind of came to the conclusion that the drive-in concept was unwieldy. It was slow and disorganized and had a lot of overhead. On top of that, the customer base of rowdy, littering, jukebox-listening, smoking, kiss- and or sex-having teenagers was scaring off the family values crowd. In 1948, they closed their doors for a three-month redesign, and there was some laying out and choreographing with red chalk on a tennis court involved. And when they reopened, they were a drive-in restaurant no more. Where once there had been bellhops, there were now self-service counters. Where once there had been plates and silverware and a dishwasher, there were now paper wrappings and cups and no dishwasher. Where once there had been barbecue and tamales, there were now only 9 items. Hamburgers, cheeseburgers, chips, pie, milk, coffee, and three flavors of soft drinks available only in one 12-ounce size.
Ah.
Yeah. And they were really focused on speed. And they got the idea to adapt Henry Ford's automobile assembly line for their restaurant with what they called the Speedy Service System.
Speedy. So many E's involved.
Yes, yeah. There are a lot of E's. Here's how it worked. There were 12 employees, all male, and each specialized in a specific thing. A lot of the food was already made to save time, and also to save time, all the burgers were the same. Ketchup, mustard, both dispensed from a custom-made dispenser. Not one, but two pickles. And onions. If you wanted something else, you'd just have to wait, Buster. This efficiency and lack of choice meant that orders were frequently ready before they were placed. And you could see inside, too, to marvel as your food was being made. Grill to counter in 30 seconds, they said. Sounding a bit more like the McDonald's we know, right?
Yeah.
Wrong!
Oh.
No, you're right. The story goes that their first customer was a 9-year-old girl who bought a bag of burgers. But there were problems.
Problems.
Problems. One, the fired car ops would park outside and heckle. Yeah. Two, customers were confused about the self-service counter. And the silverware. Where's the silverware? Where do we sit? Questions. Confusion.
Hmm.
So what did the brothers do? What we all do in times of crisis. Add some french fries and milkshake.
Oh.
Makes everything better.
It does.
The milkshakes were triple thick, by the way.
Triple thick.
I know. And that milkshake brought everybody to the yard. Or the self-service counter, perhaps, is more accurate. And the 15-cent hamburgers didn't hurt either. And they were one of the first in the industry to use infrared heat lamps to keep their fries warm. The fries were special. Sure, I probably don't need to tell you that. Max spent a lot of time trying to pin down the method to get perfect crunchy fries, and he eventually arrived at drying out Idaho potatoes in the desert.
Wow.
Mm-hmm, to bring out the sugars. There was a very specific timing involved as well.
Yeah, that's still part of what they do today. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Dick was the inventor of the two, and apart from the Speedy system, he came up with the golden arches. You know, the rounded curves at the top of the M in the logo. Mm-hmm. And they used to kind of, like, bookend the restaurant.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not so anymore, but that was his original vision. By the 1950s, McDonald's was making $350,000 a year thanks to reduced labor cost and their clientele of mostly families and businessmen.
Mm-hmm.
They passed the 100 million hamburger mark by 1958. And as part of their success, they attracted a lot of imitators.
How did they deal with these imitators?
Oh, they were like, come at me, bro. They'd give potential competitors tours. They'd give them details when asked. Yeah. Then they realized that they could sell their formula and get some extra cash. So when Primex, the company that McDonald's gets its, or got its shortening from, published an article about the French fries at McDonald's in American Restaurant, which was an industry magazine, the brothers ran an ad in the same issue that read, "The most important 60 seconds of your entire life."
Wow.
Yeah.
Huh.
A lot of dishonest folks tried to copy the brothers' success. Most of them failed. But some honest ones tried to franchise it, like Neil Fox, who was an oil executive from Phoenix. He paid $950 to franchise, largely because he thought the name was lucky, in his words.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Not wrong.
Well, no, apparently not.
Suppose not.
Yeah, well, this got him, the $950 got him a training blueprint, a manual, a structure with the two golden arches, and the works of how to make a McDonald's work. Only for each of the six franchise locations they tested, it didn't work.
Oh.
Not like the brothers wanted it to, anyway. And that might be why when Carnation of Carnation Milk came in and offered to erect McDonald's all across the U.S., they turned it down. Max said about the choice, more places, more problems. But McDonald's are pretty much everywhere now, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So how did that happen? Well, McDonald's attracted one particular person we have to talk about. And it brings us back to those milkshakes, which played an integral role in what McDonald's would become. But first, one last quick break for a word from our sponsor.
This episode is brought to you by Pronamel.
Not all our favorite foods and drinks are BFFs with our teeth. Salad dressing, seltzers, and fruits can be enamel enemies. So if you eat or drink those things regularly, your enamel could be at risk. And once it's gone, it's gone.
Pronamel Intensive Enamel Repair penetrates deep into the enamel surface, locking in vital minerals to repair acid-weakened enamel. And with new Pronamel Repair mouthwash, you can enhance that repair beyond just brushing.
Pronamel is the number one dentist-recommended brand for acid erosion, so buy Pronamel Repair anywhere you buy toothpaste or mouthwash. Visit pronamel.com.
Ready? Okay. Give me a beach.
Beach!
Give me great food.
Tacos!
Give me adventure.
Hiking!
Give me a date night.
Sunset cruise!
Give me some smiles.
Cheese!
Give me more beaches.
Beaches!
What's that spell?
San Diego!
If you're happy and you know it, San Diego is the place to show it. Book your trip at sandiego.org. Funded in part with the City of San Diego Tourism Marketing District Assessment Funds.
As important as choosing the right destination when traveling is choosing the right travel partner.
Gene!
Eugene Fodor!
Gene, was booted!
Much of the joy you will find on the road comes from the person you share it with.
So you write the books, Gene, and last hour on the business. I understand now. It's a wise man who marries a wiser woman.
But be careful and choose your travel partner well, because the worst trips result when two partners have two different agendas.
Get down!
I'm not stupid, Gene. Something is going on, and it's high time you tell me the truth.
Freeze, Americano!
Gene, run!
So travel before it's too late. Your money will return, your time won't, and we're all too quickly approaching that final destination.
Listen to Fodor's Guide to Espionage on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Neil Strauss, host of the Tenderfoot TV true crime podcast, To Live and Die in LA. I'm here to tell you about the new podcast I've been undercover investigating for the last year and a half. It's called To Die For. Here's a clip.
All these girls were sent out into the world, and they were told, try to meet important men, try to attach yourself to important men.
The voice you're hearing is a Russian model agent telling me about spies sent out to seduce men with political power.
The war in Ukraine is also being fought by all these girls that are all over important cities.
For the first time, a military-trained seduction spy reveals how the Russian government turns sex and love into a deadly weapon.
If you want to kill your target, it's easy. You just seduce him, take him somewhere, start having sex, and then he's very vulnerable, so you can kill him easily.
To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And we're back. Thank you, sponsor. So, the year was 1954,
ooh,
and one Ray Kroc, a 52-year-old second-generation immigrant from Czechoslovakia, was having a hard time of things.
Oh, no.
Yeah. He had been working as a middlingly successful traveling salesman for about 30 years, peddling paper products and kitchen equipment to independent restaurants around the country. At the time, his product was Prince Castle Multi-Mixer Milkshake Machines, which were being run out of business by a competitor.
Oh, no.
Mm. He had a good turn of luck, though, when he sold not just one, but eight machines to this hamburger shop in San Bernardino. The owners needed the capacity to make 40 milkshakes all at one go, and he was curious. So Ray Kroc packed a bag and went down to check out McDonald's. He was so impressed by the business model. He later said about his visit to this restaurant, "When I saw it working that day in 1954, I felt like some latter-day Newton who had just had an Idaho potato caromed off his skull."
Wow.
Kroc had spent 30 years watching what works and doesn't at low-end dining establishments, and he, like so many others, saw that the McDonald brothers really had something here. So, went back to his hotel, thought about it, came back the next day, and made them a franchising offer.
Wow.
Which they refused. And here's the, like, sliding doors alternate reality moment where you're, like, this close to never having tasted a McDonald's fry. But Kroc did not go home. Instead, he countered and he cajoled, and eventually he convinced the McDonald brothers that he could make a franchise model work for them. He opened up the first experimental offshoot in 1955 in Des Plaines, Illinois, a suburb of Chicago neighboring the suburb where Kroc lived. And if you're wondering what it takes to build two stores into one of the biggest international businesses on the planet, the answer is a good idea and total obsession.
Ooh.
Yeah. Kroc took the concepts of precision and reproducibility started by the McDonald brothers and expanded them both in terms of the food and the franchises. He specified McDonald's hamburger as being 1.6 ounces with a diameter of 3.875 inches and a fat content below 19%. He built a laboratory to devise the perfect batch of French fries. He created a method to allow two stores at opposite ends of the country to deliver an identical platter to customers down to the size of the mustard dollop on the burger bun. When he sold franchises, and he would sell 79 of them in the first 3 years, he wasn't selling a name and some recipes. He was selling an entire operating system. At that original location, he personally scraped gum off of the parking lot pavement. He often said, there's a bunch of things he often said, I believe in God, family, and McDonald's, and in the office, that order is reversed.
He is quite quotable.
He's amazingly quotable. But he wasn't making money due to the terms of this original deal that he had made with the McDonald's brothers. Under financial advisement, Kroc incorporated another engine into this business. Under a subsidiary he named the Franchise Realty Corporation, he began leasing up land for potential store sites, which could then be subleased to franchisees at huge markups, both making him lots of cash and giving him greater control over the stores in the long run, because as landlord, he could work in all kinds of terms into these franchise agreements. This is still a major source of the company's income, by the way. They've got $30 billion in real estate assets today.
Wow. I did like a full mouth agape expression at that.
Meanwhile, tension was growing between Kroc and the McDonald brothers, who were not living up to Kroc's ambitious vision. Kroc could have sold his shares and started a competing franchise, but he wanted that name, that lucky name. So in 1961, he changed the name of his land subsidiary to the McDonald's Corporation and then demanded that the brothers sell out to him.
Wow.
And it worked. It worked. He had to go $2.7 million into debt in order to pay them out, but...
Wow. Persistence and obsession.
Yeah.
Kroc said about this, "But I guess there was no way out. I needed the McDonald name and those golden arches. What are you going to do with a name like Kroc?" Which is kind of ironic now. Shoes. The brothers also demanded to keep the original location as part of the contract, albeit under a different name, the Big M.
Big M.
Mm-hmm. Kroc was so bitter about this, he put up a McDonald's around the block. He says it was right across the street. There's a lot of contention about this.
It's like down the street.
Yeah, it's close.
Not, yeah.
It was close. Uh-huh. The Big M closed 6 years later. There's contention about this as well. The brothers say they just retire. He says he ran them out of business. Kroc called the McDonald's in Des Plaines the first McDonald's and gave himself the title of the founder of McDonald's.
Yeah, there's still plaques on the wall in McDonald's's.
Yeah. Every year on Founders Day, which I guess is a thing McDonald's celebrates, McDonald's honors him. And it wasn't until 1991 they started honoring the McDonald's brothers, too.
Oh.
Mac died of heart failure in 1971, and people who knew him said it was in part due to the stress of the whole thing. Dick died in 1998, and in his office was an engraved golden spatula used to cook the 50 billionth McDonald's burger, a framed 1973 Time magazine cover featuring the hamburger empire, and a commemorative McDonald's pin set, among other McDonald's memorabilia. Yeah, that was like the saddest. Well, anyway, Kroc lived in Beverly Hills and purchased the San Diego baseball team, the Padres.
Oh.
Kroc once said, here's another great quote from him, "If any of my competitors were drowning, I'd stick a hose in their mouth and turn on the water." He also once said of the McDonald brothers, I closed the door to my office and I paced up and down the floor calling them every kind of son of a bitch there was. I was so mad I wanted to throw a vase through the window. I hated their guts.
This is bananas.
Yeah.
And is also the subject of last year's film, The Founder, starring Michael Keaton as Croc, which is the inspiration for this episode, actually. And I got to check it out on an airplane. And so, hence, yeah. Oh, welcome to our McDonald's episode. the film, which is based on both Croc's autobiography and an unofficial biography, posits that Croc included in this deal with the McDonald's brothers a 1% annual royalty clause. As a handshake deal.
Yeah.
Which was never put in writing and never honored.
Yeah. By 2012, just so you know, that would have been $305 million a year.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway,
yep. Moving on.
From there, Croc and one of his original burger flippers, one Fred Turner, opened up the first iteration of Hamburger University, teaching their gospel, quality, service, cleanliness, and value. And also the three-legged stool business model, which places equal responsibility on the company's suppliers, the franchise owners and operators, and their employees. But as much as Croc demanded exaction, he also encouraged creativity and invention in his franchisees, as long as they passed their successes back up the chain.
Of course. And the success of McDonald's was copied quickly. Burger King and KFC opened in 1952, Carl's Jr. in 1956, and Taco Bell in 1962. In the 60s, seating was added to McDonald's restaurants, and then a drive-thru window after Wendy's successfully incorporated one in 1969. The original Ronald McDonald, then known as the Hamburger Happy Clown, debuted in 1963.
The idea for him came from a sponsorship that two Washington, D.C. franchisees entered into with the locally produced television show Bozo's Circus. When the station canceled the show, the local store owners hired on the show's star, one Willard Scott, to create a new clown character just for them.
Huh. But he was let go and replaced in 1966 due to being too stocky and thus difficult to find similar body types for birthday parties and other appearances. I have to say, I watched the commercial he appeared in and I was like, okay.
That's not Ronald.
I did have one of those parties, you know, they had the caboose.
Oh, yeah.
When I was four, that was one of the reasons.
Oh.
Because the clown was laughing in my face and I didn't like clowns.
Oh, sure.
I had another incident with a clown where I pushed this guy dressed as the Joker in a pool. Anyway, back to McDonald's episode.
Okay. By 1965, McDonald's had 710 locations and the company went public, 10 years to the day after Croc's original franchise had opened. It was a huge financial success, but as Croc often said, a laurel rested upon quickly wilts.
Oh, this guy.
To promote the brand, in 1967, he spent about 1% of the company's sales, some $2.3 million, on nationwide advertising, which was totally unheard of for a brand to do at the time. And that's where we got the rest of the McDonaldland denizens, Mayor McCheese and the Hamburglar, Grimace, all those great people.
We had an interesting conversation about this before recording, about what Grimace is. We have many questions.
Yeah, yeah. Producer Dylan specifically has, you know,
conspiracy theories.
Yeah. Like what's the political structure in McDonaldland? Do you know?
Does anyone?
Mm.
Mm. Right in if you do.
Advertising would become such a huge part of McDonald's business that another Crocism was, we're not in the hamburger business, we're in show business. And I like how I'm just slowly creeping into the transatlantic accent
for him. It seems to fit for the personality we're getting through these quotes in a way.
Yeah, definitely. 1967 is also the year that one franchise in Pittsburgh tested a new sandwich, the Aristocrat.
Ooh.
Which was eventually renamed the Big Mac.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Wow.
Other franchisees would contribute enduring menu items from the Egg McMuffin to the Filet-O-Fish over the next couple of years. By 1971, there were over 2,000 locations throughout the United States. And stores opening in Japan and Germany.
Oh.
Axis powers, not sure why. Then they expanded throughout Europe, Asia, and South America, 1,000 stores overseas by the end of the decade. The company was growing 27% year over year. And this is when it became this international symbol of American capitalism and cultural imperialism. In San Salvador in 1979, these guerrilla Marxists blew up one location, calling it an act against imperialist America. Hmm. And that is some kind of success for a burger joint.
Yeah.
Kroc had given over the office of chief executive by then to his right-hand man, Fred Turner. Though legend has it that Kroc would do surprise inspections at locations wherever he traveled until his death in 1984.
I completely believe it. I have no doubt in my mind he's the type of guy that would do that.
His family fortune went to his third wife, Joan, who would donate vast amounts of it to various charitable causes, $235 million to NPR, $2 billion to the Salvation Army.
And related, the Ronald McDonald's House Charities got its start in 1987.
They'd begun as a single facility in 1974, a residence for families to stay in so that they could be near their kids during those kids' lengthy hospital stays for conditions like leukemia.
Yeah.
Under Turner, though, the company shifted to further reinforce its family-friendly reputation. They increased that indoor seating and debuted the Happy Meal with a toy. The industry's first kids' meal, complete with sponsorship tie-in opportunities.
Oh, yeah.
They'd later land a plum deal with Disney to market upcoming and classic kids' films, and that relationship continues lucratively to this day.
Yeah. Those toys.
Oh, yeah. They were always terrible toys. Or some of them were, I still have a little transforming burger that I'm really happy about. I don't know. Anyway, the Chicken McNugget debuted in 1983 based on Turner's idea that to make fried chicken work, which they had been trying and hadn't happened up until then, they needed something more snacky like French fries than some kind of direct competitor of rival fast food franchise, Kentucky Fried Chicken.
Oh.
The first McDonald's that opened in Soviet Russia in 1990 is credited by some historians as having eased the fall of the Soviet Union, presenting what was then a luxuriously expensive yet attainable bit of American proletariat comfort.
You know, I'm sad about all our government collapsing, but these French fries.
I think things are going to be okay because, you know.
Milkshake
and French fries.
Mm-hmm.
Also in the 1990s, McDonald's started acquiring and or seriously investing in a number of those fast casual restaurant concepts like Chipotle and Boston Market. They would later divest their interest in those things in the 2000s. In 2009, they opened a Mickey D's location in the Louvre.
A different type of culture.
Yeah, yes. Mm. They also brought in a line of coffee and espresso drinks, Mick Cafe, to rival the posh coffee house industry.
Which I call Stealth McDonald's.
Stealth McDonald's. Some economists use the Big Mac as a measure of a country's financial strength. It's called the Big Mac Index.
Of course it is.
And it compares the prices of the sandwich, the Big Mac sandwich, in different countries, and then uses that to gauge a currency's relative purchasing power.
That's really interesting.
But along with all of this bizarre success came rising controversy about the brand's practices. After all, you know, if you're serving billions of burgers per day, that's a whole lot of supply and a whole lot of labor. As of 2014, one of McDonald's burger plants in California processed 400,000 pounds of meat per day to be frozen and distributed to stores. As of 2011, the company was buying more than 3.4 billion pounds of American potatoes every year.
Ooh.
With digital and internet-connected kitchen technologies, they've been able to start turning their restaurants into a big data stream about how their employees and how their customers work. Make no mistake, y'all. Like, this is a company with an absolutely insane amount of influence and power.
Yeah.
And that has made them a target for all kinds of criticism and lawsuits.
Mm-hmm.
You've got that derisive term, the Mick job.
Yeah.
There was a huge lawsuit with a couple of folks affiliated with Greenpeace referred to as Mick Libel.
You just put Mick in front of everything.
You do. There was a film, Super Size Me, in 2004, that documentary where a guy ate nothing but McDonald's for a month to make a point about the lack of nutritional value in this incredibly popular and widespread food.
Yeah.
Although in 2012, they would begin posting nutrition information online and in stores ahead of national requirements.
Yeah, mm-hmm. That's something.
Then there was a book, Fast Food Nation, in 2001, and a documentary, Food Inc., in 2008, both about the greed and the evils of industrial farming practices used by McDonald's and other similar companies.
Mm-hmm.
Industrial farming is a whole other thing that we're going to need to do a depressing episode about.
Yeah.
For example, until 2007, the farm workers who picked McDonald's tomatoes in Florida were earning about 40 cents per 32-pound bucket picked. When McDonald's and other companies started paying an extra penny per pound, it doubled their wages. Still only 72 cents or something like that per 32-pound bucket, but an improvement.
Man, that's... My dad used to get mad when he'd get a bank statement and the interest would be one penny.
Oh,
he'd get furious.
Yeah.
That's ridiculous.
It seems like McDonald's is one of the companies that is trying to either make things better or to make it look like they're making things better. It's hard to really break it down. In 2012, they said that they had helped end restrictive caging of pigs on the farms that they support. And in 2015, they pledged to switch to cage-free eggs entirely over the next decade.
Okay.
That more or less brings us into this, our modern era of McDonald's, as discussed at the top of the show. They're trying all sorts of things still to streamline efficiency even more and improve sales, get them out of their slump. There's a new mobile ordering platform supposedly in the works.
Oh.
Breakfast all day! digital self-service kiosks and tableside tablets to place orders for those fries that you forgot. Non-frozen beef for your quarter pounders?
I got a message about that. And I thought, I was like, wait, what? I haven't been to McDonald's in so long. I didn't realize. I should have known.
It's all frozen patties. They produce them in these plants and they freeze them. They flash freeze them and they send them to all of their stores. But they're experimenting with fresh beef.
My goodness. Oh my goodness.
What won't they think of next?
It's called the Arches Burger, isn't it? Something like that.
Oh, I'm not. I honestly didn't read the entire press release.
I remember people were so upset about that breakfast thing. I can't get your. What, McGriddle?
Yeah. After 11 o'clock in the morning, it totally switches over.
Really?
And if it's 11:01 and you want a McGriddle, nothing for it.
Hey, speed. McDonald's, you want your food quickly.
But yeah, no, 24 hours a day now. Or, for as long as their service
for
lasts.
As long as, yeah.
Yeah.
Speaking of our modern day McDonald's, what about robots? Let's talk about robots.
Robot?
Yeah.
Well, okay, so we've talked a little bit about some of the science issues wrapped up, that's going to be a pun in a second, around McDonald's in other episodes. The possibility of robotic automation replacing human workers in restaurants. That little bit more about that in the tipping episode, though we really have to do a whole robot.
I cannot wait.
Automation.
A listener sent us a message about this, how they were using robots. They're like testing it out at some location somewhere. So yes, I'm very excited.
Robotic fry baskets, robotic burger flippers, like literal like spatula things. Yeah. Crazy stuff. The harmful compounds that have been used in McDonald's burger wrappings.
Right.
Here the pun comes to fruition.
Wait.
That one's. I talk all about it in our popcorn episode.
Yeah.
The end of the statement is don't. I mean, it's not great.
No.
People should really stop using those chemicals. Maybe. I mean, I don't. Definitely don't burn a McDonald's burger wrapper, and then breathe in the fumes.
Okay. That is a tip you can walk away.
Yes.
This episode. With. That is something actionable, we can tell you.
But that's also part of why they've switched over from those soft paper wrappers to the kind of more structured cardboard tubs for their sandwiches, which you have no idea what I'm talking about. But they've made that switch.
Okay.
They're in little cardboard boxes now.
I feel like I just want to go into McDonald's and look around and weird people out.
Ooh. We I can see one from my desk.
Can you really?
Yeah, there's one like right down the street.
I feel like I just don't even see them anymore. Like, it's not an option. We'll never go. So health. We probably don't have to tell you. Eating at McDonald's is not a health choice that you're making.
No.
Even if you get like, well, yeah, the salads, don't fall for it. It's generally...
Well, I mean, the salad alone is fine, but read the nutritional information about the dressing, because if you use the whole packet of dressing, it's basically a higher fat content than you would get from ordering, like, the chicken nuggets.
Right. But I would like to say fast food has been really demonized and definitely is not something you should be eating often. But, I mean, there's a high salt, high fat, if you're someone who needs to be monitoring that, high sugar, high calorie. However, make sure that when you're reaching for your healthier choice, it isn't something worse. Yeah. So a lot of things that are marketed as healthier things, like perhaps your salad with your dressing, they're on par with fast food, or they could be even worse. I read an article about like some tofu dish at Whole Foods, which, you know, you're like, oh, tofu.
Oh, tofu. Brilliant.
It was the same as Big Mac. So, I mean, just be aware. It's definitely not a health choice, but if that's
what's there, and, you know, in moderation.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like a treat.
Yeah. Just educate yourself, as we always say.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But what about, this is one of my favorite weird pop culture things. Whenever you think about McDonald's, this comes up. The burgers don't rot.
What?
Someone put one out for like years and it looks the same, and what is it? Is it doing that in my body?
There's just whole burgers just sitting.
Yeah, just sitting there.
Okay. I've never heard of this, but it was one of the first things that came up when I was searching McDonald's. So in 1996, if people are like me, haven't heard of it, a wellness speaker and consultant brought a McDonald's burger. She bought one. It never rotted. To this day, or at least until recently, she used it as prop during her wellness talks. Mm-hmm. She'd pull out this like whole burger that she bought in 1996, and it had only a little patch of mold on it. And others have copied it. BuzzFeed posted a video demonstrating the same thing in 2014, although they only gave it 30 days. I mean, only 30.
Oh, not a decade.
Right.
Yeah. Lazy.
Come on. They tested a bunch of fast food burgers, so not just McDonald's. Mm-hmm. And they also showed basically the same results.
Huh.
But don't panic.
No.
Yes.
Okay.
The managing blog director at Sirius Eats put his restaurant training to the test. The ultimate test, the test of his lifetime, I'm sure, to get to the bottom of this. He had, in his mind, there were five possible culprits. Preservatives, a high salt content, a low moisture content, no air during preparation, or no contact with mold spores. Those last two are pretty much impossible, so they were quickly discarded. He made 9 different burger combinations, some homemade, some from McDonald's, and then did a like mix and match of store-bought stuff and McDonald's patty and just a bunch of different options. Some with salt, some not, different types of packaging. He never came into contact with any of the burgers, and he left them out in open air for 3 weeks. None of them rotted.
Oh.
Yeah. He concluded the moisture was the key. In the first week, the patties lost about 25% of their weight, moisture. They dried out, basically. And without moisture, there's no mold. The patties at McDonald's are really thin, so they have a lot of surface area, and they dry out quickly. And that's kind of like what is going on with beef jerky.
Oh.
So
it's like a really slow process beef jerky.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So interesting experiment, perhaps, to try.
Yeah. That's, I feel better about that.
Yeah. That's our McDonald's episode.
Yeah.
I can't help but be impressed, even if I have problems with some practices, but they built this thing. It's huge.
Yeah. It's impressed. Impressed is the correct word. I am very impressed. And I still, and I was looking, you guys, but it is really hard to find, like, they keep their technological secrets really under wraps. Like, they really don't want you to know what's going on in the plants and how they make everything the way that they make it, which is great.
Yeah.
As part of one of their, like, marketing stints, they got Grant Imahara, who had been on Mythbusters, to come and take a tour of one of their plants. And that was supposedly the first time that cameras had ever been allowed in there.
Wow.
That was in 2014, I want to say, if you want to go check out that video.
It's kind of terrifying.
It is. I never thought about being terrified by McDonald's before, but when I realized the exact scope of control that they have over the farming industry, I was like, oh.
So many industries they touch.
Yeah.
Yeah. But just one little extra fact to end this on. I'm fairly certain they are not the first fast food restaurant. It was White Castle.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, there you go.
Yeah. They were kind of the first. The Speedy system was really original. Mm-hmm. But White Castle came along first. We'll have to do another thing on that one.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
But this brings us to
Listener Mail.
Matt wrote on Facebook, after listening to your podcast about New Year's Day traditions, I want to share with you a tradition that my friends and family call Nacho Day.
Nacho Day.
Already in, I'm in 100%. 10 years ago, my close friend was a chef at a local restaurant, and I spent New Year's Day obnoxiously teasing him about how his nachos were too expensive. He got annoyed and challenged me to go a year without eating nachos at his restaurant. I accepted the challenge and set the terms that if I won, he would pay for nachos for me, an unlimited guest, on New Year's Day the rest of the year. I won. The first year we ordered 25 trays of nachos and had 50 guests. This wager has turned into an annual event where friends, family, and local nacho enthusiasts all gather at the same restaurant every day, New Year's Day. Nacho Day has grown into an event that has 100-plus guests, including the many kids who have arrived in the last 10 years, and close to 50 plates of nachos every year. There have been circumstances that almost ended the streak, and one year of fire forced relocation.
Oh, but no.
The tradition has remained for 10 years. It's become our own special, weird, and delicious way to ring in the new year.
Oh.
Invite us. Please invite us.
Yes. Nacho Day.
Nacho. That is great. That is a great one. And good for you for setting terms and sticking it out, because now unlimited
nachos.
Guests.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
That is. Since this episode is about McDonald's, we thought we'd read some of a detailed account from Tyler, who was a former employee.
Mm-hmm.
I worked with an old McSage who used some kind of black magic to turn hamburger buns into donuts. I went through a strawberry jam phase and enjoyed many a jellied donut before being forbidden from making them by our owners. The higher McPowers do not take lightly to folks who use their product to create actual food. In addition to donuts, I have seen managers take stacks of beef patties and chop them up on the grill to make ground beef, then transfer into a pan filled with McRib sauce and serve it as a sloppy joe.
Oh
that sounds good. There are just so many fundamental ingredients on hand at all times that if you spend 40 to 60 hours a week in the store and get all your on-the-clock meals for free, you can get super creative.
I never thought about it, but yeah, I guess so.
Oh.
He sent us quite the long email, and it was excellent. And it included tales of fryer horrors and people eating flies. And it was great.
Yeah, it was the face that Annie is making isn't always the face that she makes when she says things are great. But in this case, she means it very sincerely.
Yes.
It was lovely. Thank you.
Yes. Please, if you have any McDonald's stories or any other stories, thoughts, suggestions, you can email us. Our email address is foodstuff@howstuffworks.com.
We are also on social media. You can find us on Twitter and Facebook at FoodstuffHSW. We're also on Instagram at Foodstuff. Thank you so much to our super producer, Dylan Fagan, who is wearing such a fuzzy sweater today.
He is.
It looks great.
It does.
Thanks to y'all for listening, and we hope that lots more good things are coming your way.
This episode is brought to you by Pronamel.
Not all our favorite foods and drinks are BFFs with our teeth. Salad dressings, seltzers, and fruits can be enamel enemies. So if you eat or drink those things regularly, your enamel could be at risk. And once it's gone, it's gone.
Pronamel Intensive Enamel Repair penetrates deep into the enamel surface, locking in vital minerals to repair acid-weakened enamel. And with new Pronamel Repair mouthwash, you can enhance that repair beyond just brushing.
Pronamel is the number one dentist-recommended brand for acid erosion, so buy Pronamel Repair anywhere you buy toothpaste or mouthwash. Visit pronamel.com.
Let's hit it. Give me a vacation.
Vacation.
Give me a wave.
Surfing.
Give me a city tour.
The trolley.
Give me animals.
The zoo.
Give me some sea life. Give me museums.
Balboa Park.
Give me a woo.
Roller coaster.
What's that spell?
San Diego.
If you're happy and you know it, San Diego is the place to show it. Book your family vacation at sandiego.org. Funded in part with the City of San Diego Tourism Marketing District Assessment Funds.
As important as choosing the right destination when traveling is choosing the right travel partner.
Gene!
Gene Fodor!
Gene, was good!
But be careful, because the worst trips result when two partners have two different agendas.
The CIA really need your help, Gene.
Freeze, Americano! Huh? Oh!
Gene, run!
Listen to Fodor's Guide to Espionage on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Imagine you're a fly on the wall at a dinner between the mafia, the CIA, and the KGB. That's where my new podcast begins. This is Neil Strauss, host of To Live and Die in L.A., and I wanted to quickly tell you about an intense new series about a dangerous spy taught to seduce men for their secrets and sometimes their lives. From Tenderfoot TV, this is To Die For. To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.